Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain. What I'm about to tell you is something I can't explain myself. Your crew is as much in the dark as you are.
Open your mind real wide now.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
What's up, my strange and unusual friends, and welcome aboard the Mothership Radio Show. I'm Kevin Gassman, your host. This episode is a throwback interview that I did about 8 years ago on April 20th, yes, 420 to be exact, with comedian and television personality Hal Sparks. It was about 3 years before I started this show, and my interview with him was because, well, he was in town to perform at the Tempe Improv, and my gig back then was interviewing every headliner that came into town. So this interview, though, lasted over an hour, and we went into a few different directions that I wasn't planning on, and I for sure got schooled on, because most of these subjects that we talked about I was pretty new to, with the exception of 9/11, since I had interviewed the guys who made the movie Loose Change. So I just happened to come across it on my computer, and I thought, you know what, I think this would be a good one to re-air, because there's a lot of good information in this that's still relevant to today, which is scary, because this was done 8 years ago. So let's get strange and unusual with comedian Hal Sparks on the Mothership Radio Show.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
What if I told you I'd take you to a place you'd never been and do something to you that's never been done?
Comedian Hal Sparks with me. So welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, you don't want anybody on 420 to think they have to be early to anywhere.
Right.
Dude, what am I doing here? Was that me? Did I forget about daylight savings time? How does this...
You know, yeah, it's and it's also interesting to be here on 420,
right?
Whole things, because I work with the MPP, the Marijuana Policy Project.
Yeah,
but I'm a non-user. I'm straight edge, so I don't smoke.
You've never used at all?
Nothing. So I've never drank alcohol in my life, much less
really
drugs of any sort. And but it seems really logical to me that it cost $50,000 a year to house a nonviolent pot offender,
right?
And with all their abilities for appeal and all the necessary paperwork and extra court costs to go in, about $50,000 a year. And what's the average teacher salary here? $27,000, $22,000 for a starter teacher's job? So you could have two teachers in a classroom for every pothead you take out of jail.
Right.
That, budgetary-wise, it just makes no sense to me whatsoever.
So what do you think about the common sense of our government, which is pretty much lacking no matter where you're at? I mean, when you're looking at just the stats you just pointed out, it's mind-boggling that we haven't even either had a media push against it, or I'm sure there is, but there's not a lot of voices even drawn towards it.
It's not about common sense. It's about an active fight against that. Because if you look at, I mean, Nixon officially started the war on drugs,
right?
But I forget his first name, but the guy named Wright started the DEA into a policing general usage organization. Because originally the DEA was set up when it was started to fight doctors over-prescribing morphine to people. They were really fighting the OxyContin and OxyCodone of the time. They were really the kind of people who bust people like Rush Limbaugh for buying 10,000 pills and these shopping for doctors kind of things.
Right.
So they were set up to do that, regulate the medical profession, not people growing pot in their backyard and smoking it. They didn't care either way. This big federal judge, I think he was actually, he got moved up into the federal bench. His daughter married this dude who was basically not gainfully employed, and they gave him a crap government job as a nod and a wink to this. The DEA at that time was a rubber stamp organization. They just, you know, they regulated not by cops and by busting barrels open like Prohibition. They just wrote you a note and said, stop it or we'll take your license away, and that was that. He turned it into this big organization. He ballooned the budget over the next 5 years and turned it into a religious calling. And then after the 60s, where people blamed pot for black people getting the rights that they got, they basically thought that white kids on dope were the ones responsible for the civil rights movement getting any ground, that they wanted to stop it. It was an act of racism to stop pot specifically, because they used things like the Manson family, who were, by the way, may have smoked pot, but their whole thing was massive doses of LSD and methamphetamine and coke and all like a mix of crazy psychotropic drugs that, you know, weren't even, I mean, in the ballpark of pot.
Right.
So it gets lumped in as a class A drug with heroin and all these other things. And starts a movement that it's quote unquote the gateway drug, and that's how they used it as it's just as dangerous because that's what gets you there,
right?
Which is totally false and never been found to be the case. And Nixon himself did a study, paid to have a study done about pot and its, you know, ramifications. And the when the scientists came back with, it doesn't really harm anybody, there's no such thing as a lethal dose, that people who use it continue to work productively, it doesn't harm production. As a matter of fact, some people are happier and more focused on it. It has medicinal uses. He shelved the report and basically had all the versions of it burned, except the ones he legally had to file. And started the war on drugs.
Do you think, like, you know, with that knowledge being out there, it's I wonder why it's not such a big bombshell in the news that, you know, he hit all
because
these.
Because nobody wants their kids to use drugs. This is the main reason. I mean, as much as you get, there's legitimate reasons why people don't want you to do it.
Right.
And especially kids, because your brain's not done forming. I have no problem with adults drinking, and I have no problem with adults doing any drug of their choice. But during a period where your brain is still growing, which, by the way, doesn't stop, you know, in any major sense until you're 25, which is why we still have secondary education after school. It's why you stay in college until you're 25. Your brain is literally physically forming synaptic reasoning to that point. If you do that first and then start using drugs or whatever, it won't necessarily curtail you like a bonsai tree in one direction or another.
Right.
And so I think it's important to not do it until you've got a sense of who you are and who you're about.
Right.
The problem is, that's not what happens. If
no.
you set the date at 25, everybody is at 21. If you just set it at 21, everybody is at 15. That's true of alcohol. It's true of almost everything.
You say no to someone, it's the, like, what?
It's the, yeah, it's the no is the gateway drug.
Yeah, right.
It really is.
Right, in mine, I mean, my first time I ever smoked, I was 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't, you know, just one of the things, the neighborhood kids, whatever it is, you know, get a little stone, get a little buzz. And
yeah.
It wasn't like I was consistently, I need to get high again. I need to, you know.
Well, that's the thing.
But,
that's the big lie about it. And the unfortunate part of it is when you tell kids that pot is as bad as heroin, they try pot and it's not that bad.
Right.
It doesn't kill them. None of their friends OD. Now, there's no danger to it. They think maybe they're lying about heroin, too.
Right.
Lies are actually the gateway drug.
Right.
You tell somebody that alcohol or pot are as bad as heroin, or that heroin's hard, you know, smoking is harder to kick than heroin, then people go, well, then why don't I try heroin? I should be able to. I have a friend who kicked smoking. So the reason smoking's hard to quit is because there's more social protection for the fact that you do it.
Right.
You don't have to quit. People don't go, fuck, you're shooting up.
Right.
You're shooting up in front of me like that. There's no social, dude, you're putting a burning thing near your face. A syringe in your arm. That's why it's harder to quit.
Sure.
Because there's protection for it. People go, I'm a smoker.
I'm okay. It's okay. It's accepted. Right.
Exactly. So, you know, like fatty foods. Arguably, fatty foods are way more dangerous. It's funny when people go, you smoke pot or you do heroin at a young age, it affects your brain forever. You're like, dude, we know that about red meat, and you're not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
You're continuing to eat it.
Pink slime, you know.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Been coming out. I mean,
yeah.
It's how can you eat a burger now and even, I mean, it's almost, you know, the curtain's coming, you know, it's opening.
Yeah,
and
which is good.
It's very good.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that'll be exposed. I think this is a big year for that. Look, we already know about the beef. It was a big story this year.
Yeah, eggs.
Eggs, chicken, eggs, poultry, anything dairy is kind of bad news for you these days, you know.
Well, and people would go, my grandfather ate that stuff when he was young and it didn't affect him. Well, it was different then. They didn't have the antibiotics and stuff in it then. Those eggs were brought from not very far away.
Right.
You know, they were never frozen and placed in like plastic packaging and shipped from Mexico or something, you know, where there are no regulations about what's happening in the water downstream from a nuclear power plant. There was none of those extra factors. And then you had these massive, like, cancer blooms and all this kind of stuff. And then you want to pretend that that's not part of the equation.
Right.
The problem is, people look at eating beef or something as almost like an identity thing. Like, that's what makes you tough.
Sure.
Is I eat cow. Well, guess what? It's not like eating wolf or bear. You could take a cow down pretty easily. You could get close to it. It won't run.
Right.
You could cave its head in or chop its head off, and it wouldn't that's why we domesticated them.
Right.
Eating a domesticated animal of any sort, chickens, cows, pigs, doesn't make you tough. It can't.
Yeah.
But that perception is what keeps people continually just shoveling this stuff down. And there's a lot of support for it, not just from industry.
Well, it's the peer pressure in a sense. Because, you know, I've been out with a friend of mine. He was an Army guy and everything. And we're eating. And, you know, he'll order the steak or something like that. If I order, like, the fish or, you know, maybe just whatever it is, anything besides the steak, I got to look.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what? Come on, get a steak.
Is your manhood on such a tipping point that you go, if I don't eat the most manly dish here, people will question whether my penis works or my sexuality? Like, that seems to be, it's almost,
weird?
It's like, if I don't eat the steak, I might as well be wearing a dress and dancing around the room.
Right.
And it's stunning how defensive people get about that. And it's, you know, people, you know, I have a good friend of mine, the guitarist in my band, Brian, he's great, he's a really talented guy, but sometimes when you bring up vegetarianism, he acts like you're an oppressor. Like, I don't want to be told by the man how to eat. Like, dude, that's not the man. The man is McDonald's. The man is, you know, all these steakhouses all over the place. The beef industry is the man. They're the ones who sued Oprah.
Right.
Oprah's not the man in this situation. She's going, she made a suggestion that she, and said she's not going to eat beef anymore because she doesn't think it's healthy. And they sued her for it. That's the man.
Yeah, that's bull.
Yeah, right.
No pun intended.
In the truest sense of the word.
Right.
So, you know, to me, you got to be safe enough to be honest about stuff. You got to feel strong enough about yourself to go, I don't smoke pot, I don't drink, I don't do drugs. I'm not going to. I have no interest in it. It's not my life path. However, I do think that the financial costs and the social costs of our war on drugs are a complete failure by any metric. And I know too many people who smoke or who have done drugs in the past or who drink socially who aren't a problem to society, who aren't going down a dark path that's going to end up someplace bad.
Right.
And while I don't encourage it at all, I think every chemical experience that you can have on drugs is already in your brain. It just turns it loose, and there's better ways to get there.
Right.
That's my own path. But I wouldn't impose that on anybody legally.
Well, I've always said, too, as far as the pot culture, the stoner culture, whatever it is, it's been here forever. We've functioned on high for the longest time. So in my opinion, it's really one of those things where the other part of society who doesn't believe in it, just to say enough, we're cool, we'll acknowledge you exist, we'll welcome you into our society.
It's the same thing as gay marriage. You want people who don't use, you know, non-users, straight people, to dictate how other people act that has no bearing on their own lifestyle. I mean, there's no way that two gay people getting married affects your marriage, nor does it limit your own relationship, nor in your expression with your children. If it does, that's your weakness as in a socially awkward sense with your own family and your own community. If you can't express the value of being of your feelings as a heterosexual, you have no business giving detriment to the feelings of a homosexual, or, you know, or a gay person, or a lesbian, or bisexual, or transgender person, because it's none of your business.
Right.
It doesn't affect you. Who when in Vermont, when they legalize gay marriage, runs home to their house and goes, well, honey, we have to get a divorce because marriage means nothing anymore.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
It is so weird.
It's childish. You're literally trying to legislate other people, you not feeling icky about something else.
Right.
And I would not impose my views about drugs, that I would not use them and I don't want to use them and I don't think they're healthy, on somebody else. Because I feel that way.
Right. Because if you were out there saying drugs are bad, alcohol is bad, smoking's bad, and you've never done any of those, and you're against it, then it's like, well, it doesn't flow.
Exactly. And you also want to implement laws to stop other people from doing something. That there are already laws that keep you from driving, riding high, whatever, or drunk. That's all you need. I just don't run over me with a bus while you're looking the other direction, you know. But that's true about distracted driving or being, you know, or texting or whatever.
Texting.
I don't have a problem with texting, but if you're texting and you hit me while I'm on my motorcycle, I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
And there's laws against that, as there should be. You know what I mean? It's, you know.
There was a commercial a long time ago, even before cell phones. I remember this living in L.A. It was on TV. It was so-and-so was driving and didn't like a song on the radio, so she killed two people.
Yeah.
Because she got distracted from the
change of the radio, right?
So you think about even back then, the change of the radio was a big thing. It's like now you got so many other things rolling around, you know?
And this kind of goes to what we were talking about during the break before we actually got into this, which is that, you know, we're in a period where people aren't necessarily taking what they know about the drug war and its failures or whatever and instigating it. It seems like this anti-common sense thing. But these are really the growth pains of any society. We just haven't gotten there yet. We're in the middle of it. We can't get to where you can't climb a ladder without, you know, hitting most of the rungs.
Sure.
And these are just some of the rungs. And texting and being on the radio.
Right.
In a couple of years, quite frankly, Siri or some version of it will be available in every vehicle, and you'll never take your eyes off the road. And your car will have automatic stopping stuff and will detect somebody coming up onto you quickly.
Yeah, it's almost that they have that now, like the reverse lights or the reverse video on cars.
Exactly,
the reverse cam, whatever.
And eventually that'll be standardized.
Right.
You'll be so used to it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons, like, we don't have a train in L.A., and we're getting one. One of the reasons we're getting a train is because people used to have their personal moment in their car. They used to socialize, they'd call somebody on the car, or they'd listen to the radio and just have their alone moment, with book on tape, be in traffic. It was almost like a ritual. Well, now people have that on Facebook and on Twitter. They don't, and they have headphones. They can plug them into their phone, be listening to their own music, talking to their friends miles away on a phone. So I don't need to be driving
right
to get that experience. And I, and as a matter of fact, the driving is getting in the way of me socializing.
Yeah.
So I would rather hop on a train and go to work every day, like they do in New York, which they've been way ahead on, or in a cab, let somebody else do the driving or get me to work, and I can stay socially active, which is a great feeling, and it's new to us. So I think we're getting to that point. Eventually, it will become very normalized.
I think so, too.
You know, and I talk about this in my stand-up. I mean, if there's a single kind of topic of what I've been talking about lately, it's almost like Rick Kurzweil, who invented the sampler, came up with this thing called the singularity. It's this point in the future, and he says it's going to be about 2035, but I think it's actually going to be sooner, where you couple with technology and never uncouple, that humanity will become permanently entrenched in technology, yeah. Where, and it's basically going to start with nanotechnology. Once they find a nano computer, like a literally a microscopic computer that can kill any particular type of cancer,
right.
And they inject it into your body instead of a vaccine at a very young age. So instead, you know, brain cancer is a problem. We can actually dial this thing in. You wave a wand over it, and these computers that are in your bloodstream will go kill the whatever tumor we set it on. We get a biopsy of the tumor on a microscopic level. We program it into the computer. The computer tells these things, just go kill those cells and no others. As soon as they figure that out, you will have that in your bloodstream. You will never not be a cyborg, and that's probably 20 years away.
And yeah, I can totally see that. It's you know, I think it's the Peter principle, but I could be saying it wrong, but it's basically that we're advancing too fast for our own good.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think we are tribal by nature, and this idea that we have 127 people we can keep in storage in our brain at any given time is true no matter what. They said the same thing when the phone occurred. And I talk about this in my stand-up too, but the idea that somehow like old people don't like new technology is just ridiculous.
Right.
Because in your lifetime, you've gone from dial phone to push button phone to flip phone to smartphone. They went from no phone to phone. The leap psychologically,
sure.
From yesterday, if I wanted to talk to someone, they had to be within shouting distance.
Right.
To now, through a wire, whatever right. The hell that is, I can talk to someone on the other side of the earth. Is bananas.
It is, right?
It's just
the concept.
I mean, wrap your head around
yeah.
That. That's the same as going, we now have places on the moon. There's an apartment on the moon. Like
right.
The day they have living quarters on the moon
right.
For average people, that's the leap.
The vacation spot on the moon.
Right now, the moon is barren,
right.
Except for the secret alien bases
I
on the dark
that.
Side.
I saw that one.
That are, and the fact that it's hollow.
Right.
Which is my favorite
I made a cheese
YouTube
too, right?
Conspiracy.
Hollow
thing.
Moon?
Hollow moon
really?
Theory. You ever heard this?
No, I never
Sick.
Heard that. Really?
Look it up. Because apparently, you know when we did that big explosion a couple of years ago?
Which?
Where we bombed the moon? Remember that?
No,
like
I don't
five,
remember that.
6 years ago, to see if their water vapor came off of it. And it was a test to see if we could do it on other planets.
Right.
You just let off basically a bunker buster bomb on a surface of a planet and see if that will shatter up enough thing to see if there's water particles or
right.
If the burn will eliminate them and make them look frozen or non-existent. And so they had to do a test, and they did it on the moon. So when apparently one of the Apollo missions left, they uncoupled from the base, and the base fell, and the moon's gravity was enough to pull it. And when it hit the moon, boom, it rang for 6 hours.
Really?
This big hum came off the moon.
This is documented.
Documented, which they believe means the moon is almost completely hollow.
Interesting. Yeah, all right, I see. Right, I got you.
Basically hollow.
Right, to give that sound.
Yeah. And it rang. Yeah, which is great. You know, whether it's true or not, I mean, we'll eventually get to that point. It's just one of my favorites. You know,
like
that on the other side, and this is a whole other conversation, but UFO, 9/11 truth, whatever you want. I can get into a YouTube hole like nobody's business.
I saw you on a YouTube video about 9/11 rant, mm-hmm. Doing us. And I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I look at it because it was 2006, it was actually 4/11 when I had the guys who made Loose Change 9/11.
Yeah, yeah.
They were in studio with me.
Yeah, I love that.
Thanks to Kara. She brought him in. She connected
nice.
Us, and we chatted. And these are just normal kids in New York, and they saw what would happen. And they're like, they just didn't buy the story.
Right.
And,
well, I think that's enough. And the problem with quote unquote what's conspiracy theories is when you start drawing conclusions. You don't have to draw conclusions to say this is garbage.
Right.
And the idea that you know George Bush caused it or Dick Cheney was actually you know flying a drone with his Xbox controller you know into the towers
right.
And those were robot planes and that people were you know unloaded in Cleveland
right.
And all
sure.
The variants. none of that has to be of concern. You don't even have to go that far down the road. All you have to do is back up and go, this part, Building 7, is baloney.
Right.
It's BS, period. And so if you I stop there. It's kind of the same way I feel about the drug war. That's where the thing is. I don't need to go, well, drugs lead to this. Okay, there's no evidence that points to that.
Right.
You haven't done full studies on this. This is like arguing whether hypnotism works. If you're not going to, or ESP. If you're not going to do a full scientific study, you can't say there's no point to doing a full scientific study. That's dumb.
Right.
You're making a conclusion, and that's the problem I have. You're drawing a conclusion from artificial, ideas from your own preconceptions. That's not scientific, and I'm not there.
Right.
I'm not going to follow you down that road. And if you're going to say that the Saudis did it in conjunction with the Bush family because they wanted to blah, 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 that may or may not end up being true. That's immaterial to me, though. The point is, what happened here?
Right. What happened to Building 7?
Let's get there.
And what is this, three frames hitting the plane, hitting the Pentagon?
Right, the most viewed building in the world, and you're not going to release full footage.
Yeah,
of what
that's a little sketchy.
It's silly.
Yeah.
What are they afraid you're going to find out? That the people were screaming out the windows, and you could see their faces,
right,
and we'd all feel sad?
Right.
We saw the buildings come down.
Right.
What are you worrying about?
Physically watch people die.
Show me everything. Don't pretend you don't have a camera everywhere.
Right.
It's silly, especially on the Pentagon.
And one more thing is Silverstein, isn't he? He was the owner of the buildings, right? He was the one that put the insurance policy on a couple years prior.
Sure. Well, I mean, I get that.
I mean, there's a lot of things.
But see, even that makes sense to me. But if I bought that building, I'd put terrorism insurance on it, too, because it's nothing but a big target. I mean, it looks like the British FU, his two fingers pointing at the rest of the world.
Right.
You know what I mean? We think the rest of the world only knows our obscene gestures.
The middle finger, right.
But, here's the other thing. When those two buildings were put up, there was a feng shui expert, the guy who did Hong Kong, when Hong Kong became the financial head of Southeast Asia. He did the whole city. He said when those buildings went up, they're coming down. Feng shui-wise, they cut the energy of the city. They're coming down.
They're going to fall towers?
Or be burned down.
Really?
Or somebody's going to knock them down. But on a metaphysical feng shui level, these can't stand for very long. He said they won't last 40 years. And he was right.
Interesting. That's bizarre.
Well,
How'd you think that?
On a sideline, note of whatever else.
Yeah.
In Chicago, for example, they just, and I'm a fan of feng shui. I did it to my house or whatever. But Chicago had these feng shui experts come in and when they redid Millennium Park for 2000, when Grant Park became Millennium Park.
Right.
And they put the big bean there that everybody sees called the snowball or whatever. And it's this perfectly polished thing. It looks like a lima bean. It's in the middle of the top of the park. And it reflects and rounds this knife-pointed building that faces the park that kept everybody out of the north part of the park, energetically speaking, according to feng shui. As soon as they did that, the park is alive like I've never seen it.
Really?
And you can say you don't believe in it or whatever, but it happened. They built the band shell up there. They made it flowing and rounded. They didn't make it jutting and pointy like they normally do. They fixed that. Blues Fest has never been more popular, never done as well. Taste of Chicago is bigger than ever. People use it. And then they put these two pillars that had black and white faces, people of different races, every race actually, smiling at each other to bridge the gap between South Side and the North Side of town. And now the South Side is gentrified. It didn't help out Austin, which is the southwest part, which is really a bad area. It's the worst part of Chicago, unfortunately. That needs to be the next thing, and they're working on that, I guess. But insofar as, watching that happen. But it was interesting to me that those two the Twin Towers, people were like, no, not going to stick around. And as soon as they were put up, you remember the Towering Inferno came out. And it was really in reference to those buildings because it looks exactly,
tall squares,
Soviet buildings. Because at that time, we were just entering we were really hardly into the Cold War. And we were building like them. Everything had to look Stalinistic and strong. You never, the Gothic Empire State Building seemed weak by comparison to these bricky Nazi and Soviet buildings that we got used to seeing as the implementation of strength. So these buildings got built as these big cube things as an FU to the rest of the world,
Interesting.
And yeah, it's just fascinating to me, that whole thing. But insofar as, that stuff, I just want to look. Let's have a real look at it. If you're not giving me a full look and then you're telling me it's BS for me asking, then I've written you off. I'm not interested in your conversation. The same thing with the drug war.
Right.
Same thing with all that stuff. And like I said, I come at it from a non-user point of view. I have no dog in this fight at all. I'm not fighting for my own rights to be able to smoke in my home like a lot of people are accused of being if they fight for those rights. I've just looked at the paperwork and gone, none of this adds up. You're not convincing me at all. And if you're going to convince me, you better get to it because you don't have the evidence on your side.
Yeah, they just give you a cookie-cutter excuse.
Right.
Here it is. This is the reason why. And, go on with your own business. Keep shopping and doing everything
my
else.
My message, arguably, is kids don't do drugs. I mean, it's as fundamental as that.
Right.
But I'm doing it from a point of honesty as opposed to, you know, lying.
Wait till you're an adult.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Wait till you're an adult and make an adult decision.
Right.
You know,
no,
save your brain from any kind of alter. You know,
and it should go with religion too. But that's another.
Religion is the drug of choice.
That's another story. Exactly. Yeah. We have Hal Sparks hanging out with me here in studio.
It's too bad we're not talking about anything substantial.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's get to some substantial stuff here.
Yeah.
Real quickly, I want to go. I read a story about Wikipedia. It said 60% of the stuff on there is false. So is your real name Hal Sparks?
It is. Yeah.
Is Hal short of anything?
No, but my whole name is Hal Harry McGee Sparks III.
Right, okay.
Yeah, but Hal is my real first name.
Nice.
I don't know anybody who would necessarily take it, considering how it's used in media. Most of the guys named Hal are bad, you know.
Who else is bad enough?
Well, yeah.
Hal.
Like, yeah.
Hal Linden. That was Barney Miller.
He was an actor.
Wasn't he Barney
Miller? The character names.
Okay, right.
You know what I mean?
Okay,
yeah.
Character names?
Yeah. I mean, Hal Jordan's my one, you know, it ends up being your, you know, Green Lantern.
Okay.
It ends up being your one hope.
Your one hero. Right.
But you get Shallow Hal, and then every guy
Shallow
named
Hal
is like the smarmy husband of the guy, of the girl that the guy is trying to get.
Right, right.
Why is she dating that guy? That's Hal. So, and Sparks is a verb and a noun. So, you know, my dad's name is Harry Sparks, which is like some weird mental picture. I don't even know what that means. But yeah, that's 60%, and we're being bombed apparently.
We're on the
they're on to us.
Yeah, they'll believe me. I'm sure the FBI knows who I am.
Uh-huh.
Even having those 9/11 guys in studio, I'm sure they're marked.
Here's the thing is, the FBI's full of people who would shut the door on that stuff in a second. They think that those guys should be waterboarded. And then there's other guys in the FBI who absolutely are against that and think there might be something to it and would love to follow it down. That's the thing. The FBI, like any other government organization, it matters who runs it. People go, the government did blah, blah, blah. To hell with you. I hate that as much as I hate the idea that, you know, people say there's nothing to, you know, 9/11 and that drug laws should be, you know, more. Because you're not listening. You're making blanket statements.
Well, that's what Nixon did. In a sense, if he didn't have a thing about the drug war, there most likely wouldn't be a drug war right now.
Right.
I mean, we don't know.
No, there would be varying degrees. He was the guy who was going to do it. It was a timing thing.
Someone was going to do it. It was going to get to it. There was that one guy maybe who did the DEA a long time ago who got so overzealous that he said, that's it. Ending everything.
There was an anti-counterculture movement in the button-down quarters of the government in the late 60s, early 70s. And in many ways, some people believe that there was a sweep where they killed everybody who was, you know, emblematic of the counterculture. You know, there's some people believe that they seated Charles Manson, that they, you know, helped him get, you know, his ins and sort of coordinated that a little bit, and that they killed Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix and Jim Morrison and Medgar Evers and Malcolm
John
X.
Lennon
and,
probably.
Yeah. Well, John Lennon was a later collateral damage thing. They couldn't get to him at the time, so they clean up later. Same plan, blah, blah, blah. Okay. There's a lot of belief about that. But the point is, there was within the government, in the J. Edgar Hoover quarters of things, this anti-counterculture thing. They really didn't like the idea that black people were getting rights. They didn't like the idea that women were getting rights. They didn't like the hippie culture pushing for it, and they wanted to shut it down. And one of the ways they did it, and the easiest way they could do it, was implementing the drug war.
Right.
Whoever was president at that point, the countervailing pressure on them from all government agencies
was coming. Right.
Right. So even if it had been Kennedy to some degree, there would have been some variant version of the drug war.
Sure. It's sad to think that, you know, just because some people have some fun and living a decent life, people say, no, you can't do that.
Well,
we're going to put a stamp on that.
But you look at, you know, the fear of, you know, you can actually give them a little bit of leeway, though, and understand where they're coming from and their fear and where it was rooted, because here come people who fought the Nazis in World War II. They come home, they have the 50s. They just want to act normal. Nothing's normal. White people and black people have different fountains in a lot of places. Women can't, you know, are really suppressed. You know, there's, but we're all acting like this is Norman Rockwell.
Right.
Just hang on for, just don't upset the apple cart. We just got back from the war, and we were fighting Nazis, and we're fighting the communist infiltration, you know, was the big fear. So here come, less than 10 years later, you got to look at the timing of this. They just fought the war 10 years later. 10 years after that, when they're just kind of getting normal, their kids start going, I'm sick of this normal crap. They have basically what is their grunge movement at the time.
Okay.
And they start looking at this going, yeah, you're acting like everything's perfect and everything's going well, but you and mom sleep in separate beds and she's drinking a lot. And you keep calling black people boy, and I don't think that's right.
Right.
And because of bust integration, I'm knowing them and I'm realizing what you told me about them isn't true.
Right.
That they're every bit as smart as I am, that they're every bit as kind as I'm capable of being. And so you have this pushback where the kids just go, I'm sick of watching Westerns on television pretending I live in this Norman Rockwell painting.
Right.
And then drugs become a part of that on college campuses. It becomes a natural expression. I'm bucking what I say. The backlash is so the other direction that I want to fight normalcy so bad I'm going to take LSD.
Right.
Because it's so, you know, you so, wouldn't necessarily do that if the lie wasn't pushed so far in the other direction.
True.
It's like a rubber band being pulled.
Sure, absolutely.
They saw that happening. And then the hippies start talking about communes and living together and everybody should be protected and blah, blah, blah. And that sounds like communism, which helped the Third Reich, in their mind, get, you know, and was moving into the government. Here come the communists again from the early part of the century. My grandfather warned me about the commies getting in. And they start panicking about it. And they start, we got to shut this down. And then what did all the guys who were in the military and in the government who were fighting the drug war look like? They all look like 50s cops.
Right. And nerds.
They all look like that. Yeah.
Right.
They look like
pocket protectors.
Right.
Tie
and
glasses.
And the thick neck cops who didn't like it, who wanted normalcy. And so.
But what is normal back then?
Right.
You
know, it was manufactured.
It was the blinders. You know, we're living with blinders. Don't look over here. Don't look over here. Just keep it straight ahead. Everything's good.
But it was because they'd come back. I mean, the war was horrible. World War II was horrible. As much as people talk about how much. You know, yeah, glorify it, but, you know, how much Germany and the United States lost and England lost. The Russians lost like 25 million people, their entire male workforce. You know, it's like when you talk about the small government conservatives and go, you know, the government needs to get out of the way of the free market because it was when the free market was running that we really had an industrial revolution in this country. That's when, you know, America became a force for productive, you know, we had factories and because the government was out of the way. B.S. The government was helping them, the highest form of welfare, which was bombing the crap out of everybody's factories.
Right.
Germany and Japan, which are two big productive factory companies, and the British were bombed by the Germans.
Yeah.
So everybody, we weren't on the continent, so our manufacturing sector was protected. And we weren't spending all that rebuilding our entire country so we could start building cars.
Mm-hmm.
We could start building washing machines and spreading them all over the world.
Mm.
Because our factories had
to
bomb.
Couldn't do it over
which
there.
Is government welfare.
Right.
That's a form of government welfare. The government organization known as the military
bombed
the crap out of our competitors' factories.
That's...
Now, maybe it was for a good reason, but it was a leg up.
Yeah.
Our companies got a non-free market leg up. All Ayn Rand BS aside, they can pretend all they want that it was bootstrapping that made Whirlpool the number one, you know, washing machine maker in the world. But the fact is, England was in cinders.
Right.
Half of Europe, every place, every country that would be building or inventing things on that level was in rubble.
Right.
So they couldn't compete with us. They were they had to rebuild their bridges with all the steel they had.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I haven't really looked at it that way, but you're right. Because if they can't build it, we're the only ones left. So that kind of makes us the default.
Right. And the opposite is happening now. We've been dumping our money in the Middle East, bombing stuff, you know, wasting our intelligence and our technology and stuff, just detonating it in the dirt, while Europe has been building stuff and while China has been building stuff. And they're getting the leg up because China was not a part of the war that we've been dealing with Iran and with Iraq and Afghanistan and,
and
the tension in the Middle East and having to jerk around down in that area. They have been, you know, they have a hands-off kind of mechanical, you know, monetary investment in it, but nothing that would sway them. So they get to sit back and make stuff.
Right.
Solar panels, for one.
Yep.
Yeah. And wind turbines.
And you think about living here in Arizona, why, you know, this state
this
hasn't been
place.
Set aside as far as like a, you know, maybe a I don't know, like, I'm not really a sample state, but in a sense, like
an experiment, an example. Well, you kind of are.
You
guys had one of the biggest arrays being built here, and that's from federal dollars, as it should be. I mean, it, the other thing, too, is people are like, well, you know, oil, you know, came up naturally, and we didn't have to, you know, oil companies didn't get these subsidies in the beginning. They just kind of, okay. The first guy ever to be killed by a car, run over by a car, was run over by an electric car in San Francisco. He was run over by an electric car. The first cars were electric.
Back in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
I saw the documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car.
Yeah.
Blows me away.
Totally. First cars were electric.
Electric car back then.
And we had trolleys everywhere.
Kills
me. Yeah, and the oil industry just said, this is much easier because going between cities was the hard part. As long term. And they didn't want to build train tracks. So it was a big kind of anti-train track kind of thing. Whatever. That's why Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, ironically, it's like a big ad for trains. That's why it sank. That's why that movie tanked. Is because in the middle of them releasing Ayn Rand, the tract, Atlas Shrugged, this is the movie that we all believe in. This is the proof of individualism. The movie reads like a big ad for public transportation. Because you got all these trains are stupid.
Right.
You get Scott Walker in Wisconsin literally killing the big train project, which would be run by private industry. Which, you know what I mean? Like, nobody was making a. This wasn't a Soviet style train that was trucking people from Siberia.
You think he goes against it, though, just for it's the ideology as opposed to the actual practicality?
He doesn't want to run.
They'll win.
He's got a job waiting for him on the other side of this.
Oh, sure.
It's about how much damage he can do. He's a spoiler. He's not a.
But I think there's somebody in his back pocket, kind of like, you know, saying, This is the direction you need to go into,
right?
Because I mean, it seems almost like so bizarre, like a bizarre world that these politicians are doing they're just doing things that are so bad for the public, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
But there's an ideology, and this is again, it's ironic that people would pin progressives and liberals as the one who want to control your life, and conservatives are the one who want government out of your pocket and out of your house, which is the exact opposite of what is true. I mean, that's the Karl Rove strategy is call out your opponent for what you do and take the heat off yourself.
Right.
Make his strength his weakness your strength, and vice versa. And your weakness his strength, or whatever. But either way, just dictate, what you want his message to be for him, you know. And in their case, they want small government that can't prepare for tornadoes and hurricanes and dams and breaking and flooding, all the stuff you need big government for, military, that kind of stuff. You need, these are big ticket items that you and I could not squirrel together. If the dam is breaking, I don't care if everybody in town had some concrete, a bag of concrete in their backyard and a pallet, there's no way we could fix it in time. It just doesn't work that way. You need to group together and start a plan. You got to act like an adult. And it's like, you know, you didn't buy, more than likely you didn't build your house, you bought it. So there was, and you want it to stay up, so you need other people making sure that there are standards to make sure houses aren't falling on you while you sleep. You need to believe that's what government is for. And it's bigger than you can deal with. And you're not going to pave roads yourself, and this idea. So you don't need limited government. You need gigantic government that leaves you alone, personally.
Take care of the big stuff.
Leave me alone.
Exactly.
And that's where I think progressives and liberals largely are. Like, healthcare is a huge thing because other countries are moving ahead of us. They're living longer and healthier and that kind of stuff. And roads and trains and.
But being progressive and liberal, you know, those ideas are great and for the movement of society and as a whole.
Right.
So why do you think people who are conservative are against that? They want it to be the nuclear family back in the 50s.
Right.
They want everything good, blinders on, nothing bad is happening, life is good.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of belief systems in the South, and I grew up in Kentucky, and one of them is ignorance equals innocence. If you don't know about something, you're not guilty of it.
Okay.
And they'd rather be dumb about it. I don't want to hear about that. I don't want my kids to know that music. I don't want them to see that person. I don't want them to hear what he's saying. I don't want Barack Obama to speak at my school because I don't want them to, because I don't want them to get the idea that he might have something to say.
Right.
Because I have no counter argument because I'm not paying attention either. And so they think isolation is the key to protecting the family unit and protecting their church. Because, quite frankly, the more information you get, the harder it is for big Christian churches to hang on. That's why, if you notice, the movement in Christian churches has been to mega church and strip mall. There used to be a middle class of churches in this country, 300 to 500 seaters. They were everywhere. Now those are dwindling, and you have these, 15,000 seat arenas and these 3,000 seaters, that everybody drives 5 hours to because there's no church in their town. That's bizarre. And if there is one, it's a Koresh-style mini-mall church.
Right,
so literally there's a 99 and 1% thing happening in religion as well. The hierarchical belief system fits in there. So other than that, I have no opinion. But but I think that's there's an this belief that isolating protects you somehow instead of leaving you ignorant and unprepared. And this idea that, you know, the president studying overseas or living overseas or whatever is somehow a negative or speaking another language or any of that stuff is seen as an intellectual negative is
disturbing.
Yeah, well, and it's also directly related to the fact that we used to fight the Soviets and now we're fighting Muslims. And our whether it's wrong or right, that's what we believe our enemy is as a group.
We're told our enemies
are. Yeah, right. And it's also what the vast majority of the folks we're talking about believe.
Sure.
And when we're fighting the Soviets, it was a technological war. It was bombs and spies and the, you know, and 007 and, you know, watches that, you know, you could radio somebody through and stuff like that. It was that kind of a war. It was a Cold War and it was a hot war with the nuclear weapons and stuff. We were testing nuclear weapons. Nuclear science, rocket science was seen as a plus. You'd snipe other people's scientists or kill them to keep them. Okay. Now we're fighting Muslims. Well, that's an ideological war. You're either Christian or you're Muslim.
Right.
You're fighting a religious war in this in the mentality that creates this. And if you believe that you have to be – being on our side means being Christian, then somebody who's not Christian enough or is a scientist is all might as well be Muslim in this equation because you're not helping us. It's an ideological war. I don't need science. I need you to be a true believer.
Right.
Because in our minds, it's a true believer versus a true believer.
Right.
And that's where we are now. And until we drop that, we won't get back to being, you know, a technological power.
That's interesting. Yeah.
China is our technological, you know, quote unquote, enemy. They're our main competitor in a traditional sense. It might as well be companies. The United Corporations of America versus the United Corporations of China. That's really.
You're right. I mean, that's a.
Google and Apple and IBM and Motorola against, you know, anything Guangzhou has to offer.
Right. Interesting. Has your comedy always been politically inspired, or when did you cross that line?
I started doing political comedy before I was old enough to vote. I was doing Reagan jokes when I was 17 at a political comedy club called the Clout Club in Chicago. But I noticed during the Bush years that there was this weird thing, again, because we were in an ideological war, that anybody who criticized the president was seen as the enemy as well. And there were people in the audience I could just see, even if they would have agreed with the point I was making, the minute I said Bush, their ears would shut like the doors on the in Star Wars, you know, like the Death Star.
Right.
And so I was like, I need to start making my jokes about the sociological aspect of this and leave the specifics later. And that's what Monty Python did. Monty Python would leave a lot of actual politicians' names out, but they would do a character that, in such a way that you would go, oh, that's who he's talking about.
Sure.
So I stopped doing Bush jokes and started doing jokes about guys in cowboy hats who have no cows. And then the next time you see Bush, you go, oh, that's who he's talking about.
Sure.
And you know what I'm talking about. And you know I'm right.
Right.
But you didn't have that excuse, that one shutoff where you can go, he's just making fun of the president. We can't afford that right now because the Ahmadinejad is looking for us to a hole in our armor. It's like, that's not how it works at all. But that's how certain members of the audience. And I don't necessarily fault them for that fear because it was, you know, 9/11 was a shock for a lot of people, and that's fine. But that's not going to – I'd rather make my message more palatable. And so I really do deal in the sociopolitical aspect of things and our own interaction because that's the seed of it anyways. Arguably, pop culture is how we become who we are.
Sure.
And Jesus was the Justin Bieber of his time. There were 9 or 10 guys running around pretending to be the Messiah at the time, all fulfilling the prophecy that was written down in the Old Testament because you had to. If you're the Messiah, you'll do this. You'll have 12 followers, and you'll show up here, and you'll do this, and your birthday was then, and that kind of stuff. And so there were a bunch of guys running around going, my birthday is then, and here's my 12 followers, and this is. And that was the thing. He met John the Baptist, who's his cousin, and he was doing basically the same thing. It was just that John knew that Jesus was the big dog. He was the, you know, he was the McDonald's to his Burger King, arguably, in that conversation. But a lot of the stories that are attributed to Jesus might as well have been attributed to, you know, to John as well, because they were 9 different guys, and they just kind of, at the Congress of Nicaea, they took the best stories and made him one guy. Simplified the message.
Sure, absolutely. I love the analogy of Jesus to McDonald's.
Yeah,
that's perfect.
That's what it is. I mean,
branding. I mean, that's funny.
The ironic part of the cross being the symbol, you know, and many, you know, Bill Hicks talked about this, the rifle or whatever. You know, it's almost like when you talk about why Christians who, you know, if you believe in the teachings of Jesus, how can you be for the death penalty?
Right.
Well, quite frankly, without the death penalty, they wouldn't have a religion because the guy was killed by capital punishment. He was, I mean, he would have to die of natural causes. Would you have like a, you know, to kind of variant on the old joke, but he would have been walking around with a tissue. Would he die of consumption or something? He had to be nailed up.
Right. Right.
You know, for the philosophy. It was human sacrifice. They'd sacrificed a sheep. Forever, for lambs for a long time, and now the sins were viewed as too great, you needed a human sacrifice to make the shift. And so it just went to human sacrifice. That was the natural progression. It was just like a drug. You know, first we'll just kill a lamb, then we'll kill a sheep, then we'll kill my kid. No, it's just kidding. We'll send a guy. God will send his own kid.
It sounds like a serial killer.
Well, it's kind of, yeah, you graduate.
Killing, you know.
Bloodlust.
Right, right.
I mean, you know, it's funny that you talk about on television is a big thing. You know that in America, kids see 12 murders a year before they're 9 years old. Terrible. Now, for 5 years, they'll see 12 murders a year. In the Old West, right around here, they used to go see an actual hanging. Right. It's one thing to go on and see a grisly death on Law and Order, and your parents can go, that didn't really happen, it's not real, this is telling a story, and you got to pay attention to the story because it's a mystery, and you got to figure out, and sometimes things like this happen to people, and there are people who help you find, I mean, talk about that. They used to drag their kids down to watch a guy hung
right. Just
for being black in the wrong part of town,
sure. Or
just being too poor to defend himself, or actually being a bad guy, and it was sort of indiscriminate. You could come down and go, we're going to go see the hanging this week. It's like they go to see comedy clubs. You know, to double back what we were talking about. But they didn't care who was being hung. You just
right. Went
down after church.
Right.
You went to, after you left church and went to see them string a dude up and watch him twitch with your kids right there. And I don't know if they turned to their kids at that point and went, now, that's why you should behave, because
right. That's
going to happen to you.
Well, that's what it was. It was a fear mongering.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, this is what will happen if you do things bad.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're still doing it. You know, the Old West is how the Middle East is still run.
Sure.
We moved past it just because of some elements that made us, you know, we got away from certain religious
right. Folks.
We could get away from them because the Quakers had their way and the Pilgrims had their way and the early religious types. We'd have been chucking women in ponds to this day. You know, we just moved, you know, we're just graduated past it. Europe graduated before us. We're catching up behind them, and the Middle East is still kind of behind, but that's the birthplace of humanity.
Right.
And that's where we're all, you know, the further you get away from there, the better you get. You grow up in a small town, you might believe that, you know, blacks and Mexicans and women are somehow weaker or whatever, and you move to Seattle, you're going to realize that's ridiculous.
Right.
But you had to get out of Terre Haute, Indiana to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, I was public schooled in Los Angeles, so, you know, we people busted
never,
from L.A. and
yeah,
you know,
never had that problem.
So, yeah, never did. I mean, I was integrated.
But the programming takes a long time.
It does.
And you got to understand, and that's okay. You know, it's you know, I've said this before, but it's like when people, Barack Obama came in on an idea of fundamental change, big change. Well, he's making it happen. But it's the kind of change that you won't realize until 20 years down the road.
Right.
That it's, wow, that was a huge pivot point.
But this is the impatiences of America. Like, you know, what have you done for me lately?
I think there are two camps of people, pills or push-ups.
Okay.
You're either into pills or you're into push-ups. I want a pill to take the fat off or I want to do some work.
Sure.
And there's big, you know, there's a huge, unfortunately, there's a huge pill camp these days.
That's the next drug war, in a sense. I mean,
yeah.
That's
where all the danger is.
I agree.
There are fewer clinical trials on human subjects with those drugs than there have been of heroin. Heroin's been used by people for lots of times, and you know
right. What
will kill you.
Right.
You know it's bad over a certain point. You know that there are limited doses
right.
and things like that are sort of functional, and if you use it past a certain point, you're permanently addicted, and that's a problem, and
right. Your
pleasure centers go, and blah, blah, blah. But nobody knows what the long-term effects of OxyContin is, but you can look at it the second people start taking it that they can't get off it. They're on it for 3 weeks after surgery, and they're crawling, like their skin crawls because they're not getting it. That's bad.
That's very bad. Not only that, these pills are coming out, too, but a little faster. They're hitting
untested,
the shelves. Right, exactly. So it's just...
And they're not cure-based pills at all. They're all maintenance drugs.
Sure.
They're all meant to keep you on them for a long time.
Right, right. And that's why that was a Chris Rock bit, right? Wasn't
yeah.
it when he said there's no money in the cure?
Right.
It's in the
Never
sustainability of it.
Yeah, of
that's
course.
That's what it is. It's keeping people on the drugs.
Yeah.
Keeping them sustained. Hal Sparks, I can keep talking with you forever,
dude,
man.
Totally.
I haven't even talked about your band, Zero One.
We start on tour next week. I get back to L.A. on Monday, and we literally hop in a van and drive to the Midwest. Midwest, and we're playing through Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, and Kentucky, and Illinois, and just like a regular tour.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
great.
Are you mixing comedy in on the tour?
No, never.
No, strictly music. So
strictly music.
Because you're multifaceted. You know, you're actor, comedian, musician.
Right.
I'm sure you do writing. You do the radio as well. So you do a lot of different things. So what would you label? Do you have a label for yourself?
Nope.
Or just
no, I'm just
a Renaissance man in a sense.
Yeah, well, I think part of who I am as Hal Sparks, if you're going to define a brand based on that, is the fact that not only do I do all these things, but I believe everybody else can too.
Absolutely.
It's just a matter of whether or not you decide to. That's
right,
it.
Right.
There's nothing I can do that you can't do. That's why I was a big Kiss fan, and still am. I remember, saw the Decline of Western Civilization, the Metal Years,
yes.
The Penelope Spheeris movie. And they asked everybody at the end, what would you say to somebody who wants to be a rock star? And they went through the list, and everybody was like, I don't know, it's tough, and it's harsh. And they cut to Dave Mustaine. He literally has a one-word answer, don't. And they cut to Paul Stanley, who was
an
aerial shot, lined with women in a bed,
right.
Which he was shooting for a video. They just happened to come
to
the day of the video shoot. So they didn't set it up for her movie. They were doing it for the Kiss Exposed video.
Okay.
Because all that footage is in there. And he's laying there, and they said, what would you say to anybody who, wants to be a rock star? And he said, go for it. I'm nobody special. Who am I to tell you can't do something? I was a taxi cab driver in New York. I did what I wanted to do, and I was willing to work for it. I'm never going to tell you different. And the idea that I could is the most arrogant thing in the world. And I love him for that, and I appreciate that, and I think it's true. There's a movie called The Edge. You ever see the movie The Edge with Anthony Hopkins?
Oh, the bear?
Yeah. It was written by Mamet. It's about the three stages of manhood. It's basically a play. The bear is almost a sub-story.
Okay.
The idea is that the young black guy is representative of youth, male youth, and how we kind of just we let our own ignorance eat us up sometimes. We make mistakes, and sometimes we can't recover from them without guidance. Alec Baldwin just cares about money and women. He's in his mid-age where, materialism matters. Anthony Hopkins is older, book-learned, and wise, and ultimately wins in the end. And he screams at Alec Baldwin to get him motivated to repeat the phrase, what one man can do, another can do, again and again. And he tells him, Maasai boys in Africa smack lions as a test of manhood. Smack them in the face. Imagine smacking a lion to prove you're a man at 13.
Yeah.
And so
that's
true
down.
Of everybody. Yeah. That's true of everybody. There's certain people who may have some sort of genetic push in one direction or another, either in intellect or physical capacity.
Right.
But Django Reinhardt had two fingers, and he was one of the greatest jazz guitar players ever. Whatever it is you want, you just have to decide it's more important to you than not doing it.
That's what it is, man. I would love to pass it on for people out there listening to realize, when I see somebody in a job they don't want to be in, it's almost sad in a sense. Well, do what you want to do. Try it. Can't you go for it?
Yeah.
People are held back. The system holds them back.
What are you going to do?
Debt and all that stuff.
You're going to be miserable?
People. Right.
You're already miserable.
Exactly.
And anybody who says, I couldn't play guitar, tell that to an Iraq veteran who's coming back with one arm.
Right.
Tell and say, I can't dance. I always wanted to dance, but I can't dance. Tell that to somebody in a wheelchair because they would love to have your legs for the afternoon because
right.
I guarantee
sure.
they would dance like mad.
Yeah.
And there's a lack of... That I think more than anything gets me riled up as far as a lack of respect for what you have as a gift in life and how you don't deliver. You just don't. You just choose not to. It's the lazy reflex. I have no respect for. I can't do it. And the I don't shoegazing, kick the sand attitude. Forget it. There's too many people working way too hard for too little, just because they love it and managed to do something to give you any excuses whatsoever.
That's a good way
ain't
to end
nothing
it,
yeah. to it but to do it, baby.
There you go, man. I appreciate it.
But to do it.
Nice, man. Well, very cool, man. I'm glad to meet you, man.
And,
thank
thanks.
You so much, man.
Of course.
This is really cool. Again, we can probably go on another hour or so.
We definitely could.
I definitely have a lot of other things I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
But I did see you at Steel Panther a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I was in L.A., and you popped up on stage.
Right.
You and Corey Feldman were on there.
Oh, yeah. I sang backup for Corey. That was fun. Yeah.
But you do that once in a while, right? You
yeah,
get up there
I
with
sing
those,
Skid Row
guys.
With them, and I sing, occasionally I'll do AC/DC, although they're down-tuned half a step, and that's really hard to sing down-tuned half a step. You should sing it standard tuning.
Sure.
But, I'm a I'm a big metal fan. Yeah. So, and my band, you know, we're a metal band, but it's melodic rock. It's we're okay. I'm singing.
Okay.
You know, there's actually
you play and sing.
I play and sing.
Yeah.
Play guitar.
It's another step above.
Yeah. Well, again, I you know, one day I could not sing and play. I could not sing and play at the same time.
Right.
Just couldn't do it. And then I went to bed on a bust in my butt, trying. Couldn't do it. It's like stick shift or something. Just a disc grinding and couldn't figure out. Went to bed on a Sunday night, having practiced my butt off all day trying to get it. Woke up the next morning and I could do it. My
really?
Nervous system just needed time to gestate or something.
Interesting.
And it just clicked, like stick shift or something
right.
that. Where you just go, okay, now it's figure okay.
It
I don't have to try as hard. And then I can get good at it. You know, and being part of this tour is you can't skip a step. You can't go from here just because I'm known, go play bigger venues and act like it's going to be as good as if you went through the process.
Right.
So we're doing, you know, Escanaba, Michigan, and Peters Point, Wisconsin,
right.
and, you know, Bannockburn, you know, whatever, Peoria, Illinois, that kind of stuff. And throwing it against the wall, really play. Like, it's the only thing you do. If you want to do something, when you're doing it, it's a very zen attitude, but just do it like it's the only thing you do.
Sure.
And then the next thing you're doing, while you're doing it, it's the only thing you do. While you're cooking dinner for yourself or your family, it's the only thing. You're a chef. It's the only thing you do.
Mm.
When you're watching television just to relax, that's what you do. You're watching television to relax.
Right. And it's as far as, but you also want to be, you know, if you want to be a rock star, you want to be an artist, you want to do whatever it is, you got to also live the life and believe in yourself for doing that. I mean, like I said,
well, because everybody will tell you negative.
Right.
Everybody. There's so, you know, I've done every Tony Robbins system there is.
Right.
I've read 3 Zig Ziglar books. I've done, you know, all that stuff because you have to, because the entire world is telling you no, you
right.
can't, it's not going to happen. Even if you just, it's just water you're pouring on the plant while the rest of the world is throwing sand on your seeds. It's just you have to do it. You have to be
right.
The voice in your head that says I can has to be ridiculously like Hulk stronger than the voice that says you can't.
Mm.
Because the voice that says you can't also has the comfort factor of sitting there and doing nothing.
Right.
It already has a head start.
Sure does. Yeah, absolutely. We're ingrained with that the
yeah.
kind of negativity in us.
Right.
We can't do it. We can't do
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and you can. You just can.
You can. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can.
Yeah, that's my yes, we can.
I said a little slogan. I said you, I can.
Yeah.
That was it, basically, you know.
Right.
That's
I mean, and arguably that's what the yes we can method was. And it should be the carrying force.
It should be. It should be a lot more reinforcement from the society. From everybody.
On all fronts.
I couldn't agree more. Because we'd be a lot more productive, environment around us and everything would be so much better.
Yep.
Hal Sparks.
Thanks so much.
Dude, it's been awesome, man.
Yeah.
01 is the band. Where can people find your music online?
ReverbNation.com is okay. where we house our kind of site, and it's 01, /01. The word 0 and the number 1. If you do a search for it, it's on there. We also have a Facebook page, which is 01 Nation.
Well, it's good, man. You're fun to watch on TV.
Yes.
I mean, everything you do seems to be a lot of fun to be a part of.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like I said, we could have gone into so many different avenues with you. But
people can follow me on Twitter and ask me all kinds of questions about any of the stuff I've talked about. I'm an open book, and I run all my own social media stuff.
Oh, you do? Okay.
So my,
that's you.
I have the Hal Sparks Fang page on Facebook. That's my fan page there.
Right.
It's the Fang page.
The Fang?
Yeah, because
nice.
I have fangs. Really sharp
I got pain.
Yeah, there you go.
My
yeah.
bottom teeth. You really do, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Did you sharpen them?
Nope.
That's
yeah.
the way they are.
Yeah. I've got that on Facebook, and I run all my own social media
right.
stuff. So I believe in it. My Instagram pictures are really mine. My Twitter tweets are really me.
Right.
I don't have an assistant do it because I think that's stupid. If you're not going to do it, just don't do it. Yeah.
So I want to thank Hal Sparks once again for the interview. Again, this was done back in 2012 on April 20th. I went back and listened to it. I thought this would be a good interview to re-air, and for sure, I think it is, and hopefully you guys enjoyed it as well. There are a few videos of this interview that you can check out on the Mothership Radio Show website. You know, it's fun to go back and listen to yourself in past interviews. Not. I did say the word right a lot, and I edited out a ton of them. So when you go back and listen to yourself in the past, you always improve every day, but it's kind of harsh to listen to yourself back in the day. Either way, I think it still went okay. I think that rhymed. All right, so if you missed any part of this show, you can always hear the full podcast version on most podcast platforms like Spotify, Apple, Overcast, and, of course, our home base at Anchor FM, and as well as, of course, themothershipradioshow.com. So until next week, I'm Kevin Gassman, reminding you to stay strange and unusual until we pick you up again for another ride on the Mothership Radio Show.
watching the sky.
In the vastness of the cosmos, there must be other civilizations far older and more advanced than ours. So shouldn't we have been visited? Shouldn't there be every now and then alien ships in the skies of Earth? There's nothing impossible in this idea, and no one would be happier than me if we were being visited. But has it happened in fact? What counts is not what sounds plausible, not what we'd like to believe, not what one or two witnesses claim, but only what is supported by hard evidence, rigorously and skeptically examined. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.